We're moving into the corn panel, and I'm probably going to allow, I'm going to make some introductions, and I'm going to allow Todd to quiz this particular panel. Maybe I'll do the beginning of it, and Todd will take it from there. On the corn panel today, we have Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. We have Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. We have Pete Manhart, Bates Commodities in Bloomington, Illinois. Bloomington, Normal, Illinois, because you're just that big. Jackie Vakes.
That's all right. I don't care.
Stuart Peterson Group, Champaign, Illinois. And Chuck Shelby, Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. And much the way that we did the morning, we'll do the afternoon. We'll give you a minute or two. Don't be lengthy. But to state whatever it is that you believe is important for our audience to know today regarding the corn market. Dan Zwicker, you're up first.
Good afternoon. I guess after listening to this morning's session, I know why I'm moving to Texas. The only decision I have to make, I guess, is how high my cement wall's going to be and how thick it's going to be.
How many alligators you're going to have?
For the most part, I guess I can't necessarily disagree with the general bearish tone in the marketplace, but I don't think I have a sneaky feeling that everybody's probably getting a little too carried away, a little too quick. We haven't got the crop planted, let alone harvested, or harvested, let alone planted. So, but I do think that you can see the from a chart action point of view, there it does look like the corn market is going to struggle. And today we did close down 5 to 6 cents. I think a lot of that was stimulated by some extended weather forecasts that are calling for a little warmer, drier period coming at us here in the second week. So I do think we're definitely into the new growing season. I know many of you don't think we are there yet, but that is what the market is going to focus on. Tomorrow's report, I would be shocked, I guess, to see anything big change. I think any kind of supply changes, if the USDA would lower the crop, can be gobbled up on the demand sheet. Demand is too high the way I look at it. Currently, exports are probably 100 to 150 million too high. Feed usage is 100 to 200 too high. So I think any kind of reduction in crop, either from the South Dakota situation, which we're probably not going to know until we get into June, and by then I think it would be too late. It's going to be pretty much a 10 crop issue at that point. So I don't look for anything to be wildly changing. But my cyclical work would indicate that if we can't get the corn market to kind of get some traction in here and show some strength fairly soon, I think this market could drift sideways to down into a summer low. And then I think we'll find a summer low, and then we'll climb out of that and climb higher into the fall. How high we go in the fall is going to depend upon what we raise. From a marketing point of view, I think you have to approach the market, be seller early here in the spring, brace for a summer low, and then finish up your selling maybe toward late fall. So that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I reserve the right to change my mind. but for now, I think it's kind of a weather issue if you want to get corn to go up. And I'm going to play an early spring or something more normal. I'm not going to play the extreme. I think 2 years of extreme wetness, the corn delays were ready for something to break our way. And you can just see the general attitude in the marketplace, how bearish they want to be. And if they get a chance to be bearish, I think they're going to put the pedal to the metal for at least 30 or 60 days, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Paul Cooley.
Thank you, Dave. It's a great pleasure to be here at the Beef House Restaurant. Tip of the hat to Dave Dickey and Todd Gleason and Bob Bright. Also, I want to say a tip of the hat to Kathy Hanner, back in the back there. She was one of the original commodity market broadcasters from Cargill Incorporated back when you were a very young lady. And she was a main fixture for commodity markets in the state of Illinois.
Now,
I know
Paul,
I was...
That wasn't so long ago. Just remember that.
Well, that's true. And I can remember listening to the commodity market report on a 930 case tractor cultivating, and it was a three-day war, and beans were up the limit for 3 days in a row. And I told Dad, I said, Dad, we need to sell on the fourth day. He said, oh, this could go for days. And Kathy, on the fourth day, said, markets are limit down across the board in Chicago. And, of course, Amy LeGrand is from Attica Grain. She's over there. And, of course, a special tip of the hat to Steve Freed. And, of course, my good sidekick, Dan Zwicker from Decatur, who we enjoy talking to. Okay. The bright spot on the horizon, of course, is the stock market. And I think the stock market's up and going up because they smell a political change on the horizon. And I think it's not just a maybe, but it's probably going to be for real. The big factor is that I was a seller of $10 beans, old and new. I'd be completely sold out. I'd have been sold out of $4 corn. And one of the things I learned in 1972, about before the great grain robbery, somebody sold three crops of beans when I was our corn for $1.50 a bushel, and he thought he hit a home run. And that wasn't a very good move, and as an employee of ADM, they don't like to go out very far because there's always that risk factor in timing. I tell you what, before the meeting at the noon hour, I had a nice visit with John Vondrant. And what a gentleman, and what a opportunity it is for our listeners to listen to him, on the Commodity Week, at least two or three times a year. We were kidding John a little bit before the meeting about how people look, and we were comparing notes, and we always thought that John was a very serious 270 pounds. He drove a Lincoln Town Car. And maybe he had a cigar, but he's a gentleman, and he's a real pleasure to be here. And I don't know what kind of car he drives, but I'm sure it's a nice one. One of the things I'm also happy about is that he doesn't have a farm in Edgar County buying farmland and running the price up on the rest of us. The big thing... On CNBC the other day, there was an analyst there that said ethanol brought this farming community to the party. He was a stock analyst from Indianapolis, Indiana. And the other one that he said that brought us to the party and has changed things tremendously, of course, is this new seed technology, Monsanto. We were over at the Farm Progress Show, and a group of us went through that Monsanto tent, and it's unbelievable the technology that they have, and the triple stack corn. The last one that I want to talk about, and then I'll pass the mic graciously, is the when we call around the Midwest. I call Mankato, Minnesota. They say we're going to plant for corn because of profitability. We have 3 foot of snow up here, but we're going to plant corn. When I call Des Moines, Iowa, they say we're going to plant for corn because of profitability. I call Ottawa, Illinois. They tell me the same thing. We talked to a group at Watsika the other night, and about one-third of the audience said they're going to plant a few more acres of beans. Draw a line from Iliopolis, Tuscola, Chrisman, Newman, and we get the feeling that there's going to be about 10% more soybeans raised. I think the verdict is out, and yes, I think the planting intentions report will have some, I'm sorry to say, some political moves in there to talk about some hidden acres and hidden this and hidden that. But I think that the big factor here is that we're going to have an abundance of acres, 3 million acres from CRP, 3 million acres of wheat that didn't get planted, and 1 million acres from the previous prevented planting. So we're going to have an abundance of acres, and we have to be a very sharp marketer of grain this coming year.
Pete Manhart.
Oh, it's great to be here again. It's nice to meet some of these people like Mr. Bondurant that you'd talked to for years and had not met. I think that acres are going to be a big thing this year. Where are those 6.2 million wheat acres going to go? I think we could easily have 2 million more acres of corn and 2 million more acres of beans, both. U.S. government a couple of weeks ago at their all, they had a two-day outlook in D.C., said we would plant less acres of the top eight crops this year. I believe you farmers, no matter what the weather is like, will get everything planted in the Midwest. Maybe they won't in South Dakota, North Dakota, but they will in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Missouri. So I think acres are a big factor this year. I would like to have all my old crop gone of everything. I've got guys who haven't sold a bushel yet. I guess they don't need the money. But I've also got people 50% sold on new crop corn and beans, 10/20 and 4/20. We had the opportunity all winter until the January 12th report. Like somebody said, it's our choice, not the board's fault. I would like to have all kinds of protections on what I don't have sold. You can sell $5 calls. You can sell $4.40 calls. You can even sell $4 calls. I think $4.25 that we had recently on corn is going to be a hard thing to get through. We got to $4.53 about 8 weeks ago. $4.25 we got to, I believe, last week or the week before. Beans, remember, we're on a corn board. We got to $9.90 and $9.95 last week. Nobody talked about that. Bounces are times to be selling cash or protecting either with puts or put spreads, and we can add to that crop. I've got guys that sold $5 calls 2 months ago for 55 cents. I've got guys that sold $4.40 calls for 45 cents. We can add to what our case sales are by doing that. I think we need a plan. I think we're going to have more acres of both. The people that have marketing, like Mr. Bondurant said, where it's 50% of farming, they're the people that are going to, we're going to see in this room 10 years from now. You all know how to grow it, but I don't want to be the guy taking $1.90 when somebody else is getting $3, or the guy getting $4.40 when somebody else is taking $3.40. Marketing needs to be looked at daily of where I'm at. Is my goal realistic? Do I need to do anything or not? But be aware of it daily. I got a brother that farms 1,200 acres, same 1,200 I grew up on. We also had 100 dairy cows. He's got 225,000 bins of corn sitting on his property. It doesn't bother him when corn drops a dollar or 20 cents or 50 cents or if it goes up 50 cents. But if he has one future contract on the board and he has to send me a check, he does something. So having your toe in the water where it makes you do something might be part of a plan for you to be doing on your marketing.
Jackie Vakes.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you again. Well, I don't know. You know, I guess I have some diametric opposition here with Dan because I don't think feed use is just too big. I think all that we've seen is we've seen corn become more competitive against some of the alternative feeds that we were feeding when we were looking at $6 corn. The export side, I do think we might need to go a little lower, but I doubt if we're going to see it on this report. I think $2 billion is an area that they really are looking at as a strong support point, and I think it's going to take a little more proof to them that they're going to want to pull below that. You know, I hear all the talk about acres. Yield is still more important than acres. That's what it really comes down to. A one bushel change in yield makes a gigantic difference on the downside. The key is demand. And to me, that's U.S. dollar. If the U.S. dollar continues to trade the range that it's currently been trading, we should remain competitive. I sat down and figured it out before. If you looked at the current December price to Japan right now, that's $2.95. That's significantly different than being over $4 here. When you look at beans, where they are on the November beans to China, they were $7. That still says to me that we're competitive within the market, and we're certainly competitive out of the Pacific Northwest. So I think when you make your decisions, the thing we've been encouraging people to do is look at what you've got insured currently, what percentage you're at, take whatever percentage you don't have covered at your APH, and get some puts in place on that. It gives you some real security to be able to go through the acreage report, find out where we're going to be after that, because that's a big question. You know, on the 24th of February, 61.5% of all the acres in the United States in the major cropland was covered by 7.6 inches of snow, with a water equivalent of 1.7 inches of rain. Now, you go up into Wisconsin, parts of Minnesota, northern Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, you're talking 10 to 30 inches on average. Are we going to flood out the corn that's currently standing up there? Are we? And those guys right now are beyond their insurance date. In other words, you're not going to collect insurance anymore on that corn that you planted. So where's all the incentive to want to plant more acres? So I think there's a lot of questions at the acreage report. I heard Steve Fried say it this morning. I think the acreage and the grain stocks reports are going to be the two most important reports of this year for that reason. So I'm not saying to you, don't protect yourself, but I am saying to you, there are still a lot of wild cards out here in this marketplace that can take price. There's a gap on the continuous corn chart between 382 and 392 on old crop corn. We get to that point, I'd pull some triggers.
Chuck Shelby.
Well, we've heard a lot of information today. One thing I think we can all agree on, volatility is what's going on in our world of agriculture. I think another positive for us is there's no other industry I'd rather be in this economy than agriculture right now. So that's a positive. But I'd like to bring that back to, where we can make money. I think the simplest answer is that we can probably all make money at $4 corn and $9 beans. And we're going to be planting here somewhere in the next 30, 40 days. So kind of our game plan is to take advantage of $4 corn in the cash side of it. You can make some money there. As Jackie alluded to, put options are another strategy if you don't want to sell past your insurance or you're done in the cash side. Take advantage of the put options. And the third component I think we have to have in our corn marketing plan is be flexible, because there's been many things that have been pointed out today that could change the market. We don't want to get too negative at this point, but we want to sell for profit and have the ability to come back in and buy back into the market if we need to.
At this point, I think I'll have Todd Gleason come along and take us through a round or two of questions and audience questions at this time. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Dave. Give Dave a nice round of applause, please. Remember, Dave puts this thing together. He does a great job. Okay, let's talk a bit about ethanol and the way it works in the marketplace and what difference it has made and how long it can continue to make a difference. USDA in its ag form gave projections for ethanol usage until 2019. At that point, it appears that we'll top out at about 5 billion bushels and usage, that is, for corn. And that'll happen, I think it was 5-1, and that'll happen in the next 2 years. After that, nothing. Not really much to speak of. If that is the case, how does the corn market grow? Where does growth come in the corn market in the coming years? Because USDA is now saying we're nearly there. We're at 4.3 at this year for usage on it, so we're not that far away. That still says we have 800,000 bushel that we need to really throw into that marketplace sometime over the next 2 years, but that's not a lot compared to where we've been. So where is the growth industry for corn? Paul Cooley?
Well, that's a very good question, Todd. A couple things that I wanted to share with you is
wait a second. That's a very good question. A couple of things that mean you're not going to answer.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Oh, you are going to. Okay.
That's my way of trying to think quickly.
That's okay.
I see fire engine red when I hear the word indirect land use, and I just see red. The idea that we're taking and plowing up forests in Brazil when they have gasoline pumps that you can plug in variable rates of fuel as you fill them in their country, a very backward country called Brazil, their currency is zooming up and their economy is zooming. And so their automobile manufacturers, Ford and General Motors and Mercedes and Volkswagen, they can burn those higher volumes of fuel and get away with it and be successful and prosperous. So I think we can too. The second thing is that, when I hear the word cap and trade, isn't that another way to say we're going to have a tax on energy? Number three, are we really looking at a real big growth industry in corn? It's going to be a tough time. Ethanol can't cure everything. The USDA has at least 150 to 200 million bushels of too much export demand. We're losing hog operations, and the 550 million bushels of usage in corn, a lot of corn. But some of that feed usage is being talked about with low test weight. I know some of our feed guys are saying, oh, that's not true. We know that some of the low test weight isn't good for ethanol plants, and we've heard that. But I really don't sense that we have a tremendous growth industry in corn, in exports. I don't think our feed usage is really going to explode. And I think that we have to be very careful on how we play the game in corn. We're going to have to fight our way out of this corn problem. And one idea is that if you do have grain storage and new crop corn gets up to 420, you can sell some new crop futures. And if it doesn't pay off and we don't get a July rally because of hot, dry weather, just deliver it into the new crop. That's a backward way of playing the game. I know that isn't a strategy that a lot of people can afford or play, but if you have your own storage, that. The other factor is it's better to be sold at four than wishing for higher prices at some point in time.
Pete, you like to play the market on a regular basis every day. So when you talk to your guys about the daily trades, what are the things that they need to know from you about how to make that done successfully in the corn market if they're going to speculate? I want to be a speculator. It's rare am I a speculator. But
you're talking about speculating on corn every day.
Yeah, I want to day trade it.
A day trader. Goes down, you buy it. Goes up, you sell it.
That's the reason I don't day trade.
But if you look at the last, if you look at the last 6 months, we've been in about two different ranges. We were in the 410 to 450 range. It got down to four a couple times. Then we were in the 4.25 range, down to 378. But most of the time, so when it gets up towards the high end of that range, you sold the crap out of it. When it got down to the bottom range, you bought the heck out of it. And that's about all you could do day trading. Corn, used to move 20 cents in a year. We had it move 15 to 20 cents several times in the last six weeks, up 15, down 18. The way the market's been pushed around by outside markets, Greece, whoever worried about Greece before, was brought up this morning. those things have pushed it around more than our usage or ethanol usage or anything like that. So as a day trader, I don't know what you're supposed to do except when it really goes higher than it should have, sell it. When it goes lower than it should have, buy it. And we've been in about a 40-cent range. We're in the range right now. We haven't got out of any range. Tomorrow might make it go there. One comment on the ethanol thing. This morning it sounded like a couple of guys that we're going to get 12 to 15%. I had always heard that was killed. But if you had 12.5% ethanol usage now mandated, that's another 1.1 billion usage overnight. If you have 15%, that's 4.2, that's 2.1 billion overnight. Why don't we push people to do this?
Go ahead.
Two comments. One on the day trading. If you're going to be a day trader and you're trading ranges like Pete was talking about, the big thing you have to be careful of is greed. In other words, if you go into it, make sure you go in with a specific amount that you're willing to take out of it. Take it out and walk away for the day. Don't come back and try and play again. And as the range begins to shrink, like from the $4 to $4.50, $4 to $4.20, your ability to make profit also gets to be lower. In other words, your desired profit level, you have to ask less from the market because it has less ability to give it to you. On the ethanol side of things, I think, you know, we talk a lot about the 15% mandate, and I don't doubt someday we'll probably get it. But I think more importantly, we've been seeing some tremendous usage increases in ethanol right now, and I think they're coming out of California. You know, even though they were mandated to use 10%, they've only been doing 5.8%. We couldn't get away with that, but they can. They're now moving up to the 10% level. I don't know if the federal government is pushing them, but that is something that's going to help us in the long run for right now.
Corn questions out here. Tell me about what you see in the long-term cycles, the very long-term cycles that you work with.
I think probably a lot of that was probably discussed earlier this morning. You know, you can look at any kind of chart, whether it's corn, soybeans, or wheat, whatever. And you can kind of look at the spikes that we have made over the past 20 or 30 years. And as a rule, once we make one of those spikes, it takes a couple years to kind of ring out the market. And that's basically where we're at. We're the second year out from the 08 spike. So I think that is why you have a lot of people in the trade that are looking for some kind of price low in here during 2010. I've worked with cycles long enough to know that there's a fairly big variance factor in some longer-term cycles, so you don't know if the low is going to come here. You know, ideally, if you count out 5 years from the 2005 low, everybody's talking about a fall low. But that corn cycle is more of a 5.5 year, so that would kind of stretch it out, you know, into maybe next spring. A year from now, we could still be struggling with corn. So that's what the longer-term boys are looking at. If that is the case, I don't necessarily see it as a straight down. Like I said, I think there's in the near term here, you have to play your shorter-term cycle, which kind of says that you could drift into a late March low. Then you got another chance at an April rally. If you can't get an April rally going, then you go on down into a late May, June type low. But longer term, that's what they're looking at.
I almost hate to ask it this way, but how many of you have old crop corn that you need to sell that's not priced? Okay. I thought we might need to answer that question. Let's answer the question. What are we going to do? I know you gave us one idea, and I want to go across the board and get ideas here. And, Pete, we'll let you go first. Old crop corn, not priced at this point.
If we had a day like last week when we're up 15, I'd sell 25% of it or 50% of it. If we go for about 30 days and don't have a bounce up, I'd seriously consider selling more of it then.
I think the real issue was brought up this morning. If you can hold the corn and you think it's good, you're in great shape to get to the other side. But the problem is, I don't know how many of you know it's good or not so good. That's a big issue. You got to get rid of it if you think it's going to go bad at all. Just get rid of it and buy it back on paper if you want to.
Maybe we can find out. Okay, so who's got this is even worse. Who's got old crop corn they think is going to go out of condition in a month? I'll give you time. 2 months? I got one, two. Can everybody? Because if you don't, I'm just going to say you're going to hold it to July, and you can hold it on the rest of the way out, and I'm not going to deal with it. So can everybody, you think your corn's going to make it all the way to July? Everybody raise your hand, yes? Who thinks their corn will make it to July? Not as many. So it'll go out of condition, so they're going to have to deal with it.
Well, one of the things I think that you've got to think about is this. In talking to a lot of the grain elevators, local elevators and elevators in other parts of the country, they want to get this grain in before it even has a chance to go out of condition. We got elevators right around here that are saying that the corn that's coming in right now is coming in at 21%, even though it's been sitting in a bin with the fans running on it. We've got clients down in Eddyville, Iowa, put in their corn at 14%. Have had it under aeration all the while. It's coming out at 17% because of the extreme moisture levels that we've had. So I think one of the things, if we get a rally up in this market and you know you're going to need to sell at a certain time, even if you think that you've got corn that you can hold till July, get out there and get some contracts done. Because what could happen in this marketplace is if they are successful at bringing a lot of corn in, aren't you wondering yourself why basis has been better right now? They want corn to come in out of the country. They're going to give you an opportunity to do that. And so I think you've got to really take that into account when you're thinking about it, because they could really sink the futures market if we have a lot of corn that comes in all of a sudden.
Dan, your best ideas for old crop corn?
Well,
you're smiling,
I mean,
like you know something.
what you're betting on by holding grain mm-hmm. is another delayed spring of some kind. The demand market in this corn is absolutely terrible. I mean, we're supposed to be selling 32, 33 million bushels of corn a week, and we're selling 16. And we're halfway through the season. And seasonally, demand goes down from here on out. Okay. The Hereford market, Southwest rail shuttle market, trains out into that area are down significantly. Trains into the southeast, poultry, pork market, down significantly. They're buying boat wheat coming in from Europe. I mean, so as far as demand side of this equation, the bright spot is ethanol. There is no doubt about it. And with the drop in corn prices, that has put ethanol futures significantly underneath gasoline. And then when you count the blender's credit and the value of the RIN, you've got tremendous blending profits, and you're going to see a lot of alcohol move into the gasoline system. But when it gets down to raw demand for corn, it stinks. So you're basically down to a supply issue. And I guess this is why I'm kind of in the June summer low camp, that somewhere in here we're going to funnel all this corn inventory into the market, similar like what we did back in the old pick and roll days where everybody cleaned their bin in August and we had a kind of a flush into Labor Day. I think that's coming earlier this year. I think that's kind of more of a June July issue because of the quality. I think the end user or the merchandiser is not going to want to hold any inventory, so as long as they buy it from the farmer, they're going to push it into the pipeline, so the pipeline is going to get plugged pretty quick at some point in time.
Paul Cooley, you gave us one idea about old crop corn.
You know, when I asked my Oakland, Illinois cabinet there about do you think the big farmers are facing a problem with all the ground that hasn't been worked, and they said that, Cooley, these big farmers have more tricks than any magician you've ever seen. They can get a lot of work done. My worry is that it's going to be a normal planting date, and I think the function of the marketplace is to get the new crop bean price low enough to where a lot of the Midwest will be forced to plant a lot of corn. The market, you know, there's tremendous volatility in the marketplace. Take advantage of those 15 and 20 cent rallies with either writing calls or selling futures. At an Outlook meeting in Terre Haute, Indiana, One of the analysts says the best marketing tool is to tell your elevator to sell so many bushels every month. It beat all of our hotshot analysts hands down. So you do have to use a certain calendar-type marketing program. Your broker can put orders in at night. I've got several customers that call me at all hours of the day and night. Guess what? They're watching the market at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. We can also put orders in 24 hours a day, you know, with certain arrangements. So the function here is that the best way to get out of a problem is use that buy-sell pad and work your way out of it.
Okay. We're out of – Dave Dickey, are we out of time? Is that right? We're supposed to be done in three, correct? Yes. 3:15. Thank you. Okay, so questions out here. He's given me more time. Yes, sir.
If you can store corn until June or July, what's the best strategy to take advantage of the carry in the market?
If you can store corn all the way to June or July, what's the best strategy to take advantage of the carry in the market? Paul, you want to take a stab at that?
Well, you know, the easy thing is that, you know, if you were a XYZ grain company, of course, you just sell the July futures and you got the carry. There's a good carry in the market. If you want to be a little bit, you know, creative, you could always go in there and write a 4:30 July corn call. You could also go in there and buy a – I would even go in and be a little more creative and buy a new crop corn put and write a, so, you know, a couple of extra July corn calls at 4:30 and play. Let's face it, the calf is sick. You're going to have to do some real hard playing of baseball to get caught up. Why not take some chances, low-risk chances?
Okay, across the board, let's do new crop. And what you think should be done at this point with new crop, and I'm zero-priced.
Well, I want to be 30 to 50% sold on new crop cash. If I'm not, I want to catch up on days like last week when we were up 15 on the one day. If I don't want to sell cash, I want to cover it with buying puts and selling $4.50 to $5 calls against it to add to the price of that sale.
As we go forward here, trying to get $4 out of the field, if you got bins, go for $4. That probably is going to mean getting the December futures back to maybe the 420, 425 area. As we head towards planting time, we'd like to get close to 75% sold with a combination of forward sales or by the put options to cover yourself on unsold bushels in the cash.
Right now, what I'd like to see you do is I'd like to see you either make cash sales or use puts to cover whatever you don't have covered with insurance. In other words, give yourself a solid floor at your APH level. You know, in other words, and don't forget at the same time, the current APHs we have in insurance are really not very reflective of what your particular production levels have been over the last number of years. So I'd just like to see you get a start, gives you a solid floor at your APH, and gives you an opportunity to go into the acreage report wide open.
I think short term, we ought to try to stabilize this market tomorrow unless USDA throws us a bearish curveball. The market should try to recover what it's lost here last week and what it's lost this week. See how much momentum we can get to the upside, but I think one needs to take a look at either some, you know, straight hedging, cash forward selling, or purchase of puts. Because I'm beginning to think that $4 cash may be hard to get unless something bullish comes along. The market's awfully heavy, so. You know, I kind of like 390 puts in here, maybe with a 490 short call to kind of protect me from weakness between now and July. Once I think we got a low end, then I take the calls off, roll down the puts, and then try to play for a fall rally.
I agree with Dan 100%.
Okay. What's the difference between an early planting season, a normal planting season, and a late planting season here in the Midwest. Anybody want to take that one on and what it might mean for the marketing process?
Well, after the last 2 years, I don't know if Chicago and the markets will believe that we can't grow a good crop in a very rotten, late-planted, late-harvested year. But I really do think if we have early planting done, like Ellen Taylor says, we're going to have a normal spring, I think crop prices will go down quicker. If we continue to not be able to plant, I think it will help hold prices up and maybe give us a better run later.
Anybody else?
You know, if we would have had early plant this year, you know, I think we could have increased the corn production 2 or 3 bushels to the acre and it would have been a disaster to us. This last year, yeah.
Well, what I was just going to say is regardless, it doesn't make a difference if it's an early planted season, if it's a late planted season. Most of the time it's determined by what Chicago thinks. And don't ever fool yourself. I mean, you can pat yourself on the back if you're from Illinois, but Chicago thinks all the corn and beans in the United States are grown right here in this state. And so if it's sunny in Chicago, if the weather looks good here, if it looks like we're going to plant on time in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, that's what's going to count, and that's what's going to drive the marketplace.
One last question before I let you go for the afternoon. We have an awful lot of corn that's out in North and South Dakota, so much so that even USDA is not willing to mess around with it at this point because they don't know what will happen. Where does that corn generally get moved into the process? Who uses it? Who's the end user? And does it really make any difference at this point that it's still out in the field and will come in? And I guess they're related questions because I want to know who uses it, and will that make a difference here? Anybody got an idea?
Nebraska feedlots, it's not going to go any place but south. It is not going to go east. So it's going to go straight south into the Nebraska feedlots. If there's a lot of it, it maybe works its way into the Kansas feedlots. But
there are ethanol plants. Yeah. So not a big problem here, right? Other questions? All up, all done. Give these folks a nice round of applause, please. Pete Manhart is with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Dan Zwicker is at ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. Jackie Vakes with Stuart Peterson out of Champaign, Illinois. And Chuck Shelby with Risk Management out of Lafayette.